That's your 8:06 on this Wednesday, September 8th. 45 degrees currently in Old Town Park City. We've got 43 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Gebo. Good morning.
Good morning and happy Wednesday. We're halfway to the weekend, but our weather, unfortunately, it's going to be more of the same over the next couple of days, where in Park City, we're going to be dealing with more times of patchy smoke, more or less through Friday. Temperature-wise today, we're going to be in the middle 80s, so the temperatures are running about 10 degrees above seasonal averages. Into tonight, temperatures will be dropping into the middle 50s in most spots. We might see a few more spots drop into the 40s in those higher elevations. But then for Thursday, high of 86 degrees, more times of patchy smoke mixed in with the sunshine. The air quality continues to not be the best. But as we transition from Thursday into Friday, we're going to start to see some changes with our weather. Our winds are going to become a little bit more southwesterly. There's also going to be a system moving in from our west, and that should be able to help a little bit of moisture work its way in. Hopefully that helps push some of the smoke out of here as well. But for Friday, the temperature will be running about 5 degrees cooler with a daytime high of around 80 degrees. And by the second half of Friday, we'll also introduce a slight chance for showers, and we'll keep a slight chance for showers and maybe a few thunderstorms from the second half of Friday through Friday night. And we'll also keep about a 50-50 rain chance in the forecast through Saturday. Temperatures will also continue to be a little bit cooler on Saturday. Daytime high is going to be ranging mainly into the middle 70s, so that's a little bit closer to where we should be for this time of year. So on Friday, about a 1 in 3 rain chance for the second half of the day. On Saturday, about a 1 in 2 rain chance. And then as we go into Saturday night and Sunday, we're still going to keep a slight chance for showers and maybe a thunderstorm as well. But by Saturday night into Sunday, conditions will start to kind of dry back out, so the chance of seeing rain will continue to go down. Daytime highs will kind of settle into near seasonal averages. Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday with highs in the lower to middle 70s, and overnight lows will be in the lower and middle 50s starting Saturday night, lasting through Monday night as well.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
8:08 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, stay tuned. Coming up in the Local News Hour, I'll be talking with Park City Police Officer Leslie Welkler, along with Park City Fire Department Battalion Chief Darren Nelson. They've got details on Saturday's 9/11 Memorial Walk happening. Then the Vice President of Park City Pickleball Club, Tracy Swenson, with details about the Pickleball Marathon also happening on the 11th this Saturday. Finally, Summit County Health Department Deputy Director Shelley Worley talks to us about her new position and duties. Stay tuned. And stay tuned. Coming up on The Mountain Life this morning, right after the Local News Hour, today's guests are Dr. Blythe Grossberg. She wrote a captivating memoir about tutoring for Manhattan's elite. Her new book is I Left My Homework in the Hamptons, What I Learned Teaching the Children of the 1%. Then a conversation with Dr. Dale Bredesen. His new book is The First Survivors of Alzheimer's, How Patients Recovered Life and Hope in Their Own Words. This is his new book about talking with dementia patients who went from hopeless to hopeful again. You can hear directly from the first survivors of Alzheimer's with their own amazing stories of hope told in their own words. Stay tuned for that. It's 8:10 now. Good morning. Well, at least three generations of the Martinez family turned out for the dedication of the larger-than-life old miner's statue there at the base of Treasure Mountain, appropriately on Miner's Day. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that.
Rich Martinez was born in Park City in 1935 into a mining family. The statue created in his likeness celebrates his life and contributions to Park City. His eldest daughter, Deanna Welch, talked about her father, known as the old miner, and she highlighted the sacrifices made by men who worked in the dangerous mining profession. She said many men lost their lives in the Park City mines, including her husband's grandfather.
Our dad's generation was the last of the Park City miners to work full-time underground and to support their families through mining. This statue is a likeness of our father, but more importantly, it's a memorial to all of the miners who worked in the Park City mines. This statue is to honor and recognize all those miners who worked in a cold, dark, underground cavern. It was a dirty, back-breaking, and dangerous job.
Park City Mayor Andy Bierman opened the ceremony with remarks highlighting the significance of the location at the base of Treasure Hill on Lowell Avenue and the importance of maintaining the city's mining legacy.
This hill has long played an important role in our community. For many years, it was the nexus of the mining industry. We had the ore carts come down here. You can still see the remnants. We had the Crescent Tram run through it, and we had mines on this hillside. And then early on, there was ski jumping and skiing, sort of a sign of things to come when we took on a ski economy. And then this hill was slated for development, but this community said no. They said they wanted something else.
Bierman reminded those attending that in 2017, the community overwhelmingly supported a bond to preserve the 112 acres of open space that will house the statue of Rich Martinez, create a public gathering area, and access to recreation. He said Rich Martinez lived his entire life in Park City and had contributed in too many ways to mention them all.
Rich was an icon in our community. Now, he spent 16 years on city council, was very dedicated to it. But today is particularly appropriate because not only for many years was he a key organizer in Miners Day, but for over 20 years he participated in the drilling and mucking as well. But he also helped bridge the mining to the ski area by building some of the first chairlifts in town.
Deanna Welsh said the Sweeney family helped to accelerate the placement of the statue. She mentioned Martinez's grandchildren who emptied piggy banks to support the family raise money for the project. She acknowledged the city's help in dedicating the land for the sculpture and thanking the artist who created the monument. You can find photos of the statue and ceremony on kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Police Department, the Park City Fire Department, and the Summit County Sheriff's Office will be holding a memorial ceremony honoring the 20th anniversary of 9/11 this Saturday. In the studio with details, I have Park City Police Officer Leslie Welker, along with Park City Fire Department Battalion Chief Darren Nelson. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Leslie, you and I were just talking about this. You and I were working together 20 years ago. You were the office manager at KPCW.
Yes, downstairs in the basement at the old Marsac building.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then you went on, I think, in 03 then to go through the peace officers training and then becoming a Park City police officer. Since you've been there, have we been honoring, you know, the memories of 9/11?
Yes, in fact, the first one I remember, I had only been there a couple of days. I started September 3rd, 2003, and a few days later they had me down on Main Street for the first memorial that I had been to. We did a flag ceremony by the Main Street Post Office, and they had some fire trucks come down with lights only, and I remember it just had a really big impact on me.
Yeah. So what's happening then this Saturday? Do you want to take that, Lance?
Sure. This Saturday at 7 a.m., we're going to have a silent procession. It's going to start at the police department at 2060 Park Avenue. And we are going to have the procession southbound on Park Avenue to City Park. We're going to have the Park City Fire Department Honor Guard. We'll be carrying a flag. We have a rifle honor guard made up of Summit County deputies and Park City officers. We have bagpipers. We're going to have fire trucks, other apparatus and that. It will be a silent procession, but public is invited to join us along the way and walk with us.
All right, we'll talk a little bit more about those details. So, Darren, it sounds like police, sheriff, fire departments all have some kind of role in this?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this was one of those events that we all remember very vividly in our lives. You know, we all know where we were at. And emergency services at all different levels were impacted tremendously in New York that day. And so it's an opportunity for us to come together collectively to show our support and take this opportunity to remember all those that that served so valiantly on that day.
Yeah. So where were you?
I was actually at work.
For the fire district?
I was working here in Park City. I've been in an employee here, a firefighter, since 1995. So I've been here almost 26 years now. And that day I was working in the old burn station, which has now been replaced. But for those of you who've been in town long enough, you remember that old station out on Bittner Road, and that's where I was that morning. And we had just reported to work, remembering or getting ready for the day, and all of a sudden the news was on, and you at a moment's notice were glued to the TV because of these amazing events that were taking place.
Yeah. Why do you think it's something that we is important that we continue to recognize every year?
Well, it's an opportunity for us to take time to focus on these folks that have given their time and service. You hear so often that when people were leaving so desperately, that the emergency workers, the police officers, the firefighters, and the other emergency officials there in New York were going into the scene. You know, they were going in when everybody else was going out because they were trying to make a difference. And unfortunately, it was one of the largest losses of life of emergency workers in history. And it was devastating.
Yeah, and some, of course, still paying for it. I mean, there was just a new study that was released talking about the numbers of first responders who had gotten there first and that were able to live through it.
Well, right. You know, I mean, tremendous loss of life that day. And ultimately, many are still dealing with it, right? I mean, so many people have continued to lose their lives because they've gotten sick. Dealing with a lot of health issues from being on that site for so long after the initial event that it's left a devastating mark on history and on the emergency services together.
Leslie, you mentioned that the public can be involved in this if they'd like. So where do they need to be? I mean, you said they can join anywhere. I mean, is there enough parking at the police station to start there? Or
There'll be some parking at the police station. We don't have a huge parking lot, but they can park anywhere along the route and join us, or they can park at City Park. There won't be a lot of parking immediately around Miners Hospital because we're going to have the large fire trucks, but on either end, they should be able to be there. One of the things I did want to mention is we are going to have a few really special guests. We have several people from New York that were there, New York, at the World Trade Center that day, and that are here living in Summit County in Park City right now. And we're going to have one of them that has agreed to give some remarks for us. And he was a battalion chief with the FDNY.
Wow. Okay. And I also note that you've got somebody from the police department, the fire department, and the Summit County Sheriff's Office speaking?
Yes. Representative from the three different agencies.
All right. And these aren't the folks that were there. They've just got their own personal comments then to make?
Yes.
And then you've also managed to wrangle in former Governor Gary Herbert.
Yes. I am excited about that. He has always been a very strong supporter of first responders, police and fire in the state of Utah. So we've tried to have him come for quite a number of years. He's just been always, his schedule is just hasn't been available. And we thought maybe we had him in 2020, but we all know how that went. So he is coming this year. So I'm really grateful and pleased with that.
All right. So how far is it from a walk from the police station to the City Park? Have you measured that?
I did. It's just 1 mile. Everybody in Park City can do that. And it'll be the weather's supposed to be good. And I think we had some people walk with us several years ago, and they really enjoyed. They felt like it was a good way for them to remember and honor those who we'd lost.
All right. How long does it take to walk that mile?
Well, it's going to be a little under half hour because we'll just be going slowly, you know, so that anybody, you know, can do that. So
that's uphill, definitely.
I mean, a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Again, you're leaving from the Park City Police Station at 7, and then we'll be in City Park there, where by the bandstand. Is that where you're gonna?
It'll actually be at Miners Hospital. It'll be set up for the speakers on the porch at Miners Hospital. So there'll be room for people on the grass. Everybody can kind of space out. And then we'll have the fire department do the flag ceremony. We have the rifle honor guard. We have a few other things planned.
Okay. And again, it'll all be wrapped up by 9 o'clock.
By 9 o'clock.
All right. Anything else either of you'd like to say?
No, thank you for the opportunity to be here to recognize this event, and I think it's just a tremendous opportunity for the community to come together and to remember.
And we really hope, you know, people will come out. I know it's a little early, but we try to, at the times when the tower collapses, we try to sync it to that. So we'll be done. They'll have the rest of their day, but we'd really like the public to come out.
Okay. Leslie, Darren, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:23. Well, still to come, we'll be talking with Tracy Swenson. She's the vice president of the Park City Pickleball Club. And later on, Summit County has hired a new deputy health director, Shelley Worley. She's been with the department, though, for years. She'll tell us about her new position and some of the new duties that go along with it. Also, hey, a reminder that you can join KPCW for week 5 of the Park City Minor football game. The Miners traveling to Murray this week to take on the Spartans on Friday night. Pete Gilwald and Scott Chester will bring you all of the live high school football action as the Miners look for their second win of the season. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. right after Marketplace here on KPCW. We also know that number of you bring in your headsets and kind of listening in to the live-by-live action with Scott and Pete there on the KPCW app. News time, 8:24. The Wasatch County School District has clarified its COVID-19 policies. KPCW's Sean Higgins has details.
The Wasatch County School District has been following Utah Department of Health recommendations for K-12 schools since the beginning of the school year. Those recommendations include encouraging mask wearing in class and getting vaccinated. Friday's clarification details other layers to the district's policy, which follow the state recommendations that have been in place since before the school year. According to the state guidelines, if an elementary or middle school reaches a positive COVID-19 case threshold of 15 students, then the school will move to the next level of COVID-19 mitigation. Any student who has been exposed to the virus would be required to either quarantine at home for 10 days or wear a face covering while at school for 10 days. This requirement does not apply to students who can provide proof of vaccination for COVID-19 or can provide documentation showing a positive COVID-19 test in the previous 90 days. Wasatch High School will follow these same guidelines when they reach a positive COVID-19 case threshold of 1% of enrollment, which the district says is 26 students. If positive cases continue to increase to 30 or more students at an elementary or middle school, or 2% of enrollment or 52 students at Wasatch High School, then the district will move to the next level of COVID-19 mitigation. That level would put in place a test-to-stay policy that requires a negative COVID-19 test in order to attend in-person learning. The policy is part of SB 107, which was passed by the Utah State Legislature in March. The case counts do not include school faculty or staff. The school district's clarification comes after recent statewide rising case rates in school-aged children. The health department announced over 450 new statewide cases in children between the ages of 5 and 18 on Friday. More information on the Utah Department of Health's recommendations and tests to stay can be found at coronavirus.utah.gov. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:26. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Pickleball Club is looking for hundreds of pickleball players to help raise money for the Wounded Blue organization. In the studio with details, I have the vice president of Park City Pickleball, Tracy Swenson. Good morning, Tracy.
Hi, good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, sure. So the local pickleball club is joining a national effort for the Pickleball Marathon, as it's being called. So what is this?
So it's the first ever Great American, we're calling it the Great American Pickleball Marathon, and it's going to be happening this Saturday on 9/11. And it is a one-day, 12-hour event. It's going to be held from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And we are we have reserved courts at the Park City Mark, City Courts, and we're hoping for overflow over at Willow Creek and Trailside Courts. So we are looking for an overwhelming attendance because this is, as you said, helping out the wounded and disabled law enforcement officers and emergency responders from the Wounded Blue organization.
Okay. Yeah. And can you tell us a little bit more about the Wounded Blue?
So basically, it's a nationwide organization, and we are having it's a free event. This event that's happening on Saturday is free event, and we are going to ask for donations, and we will have a donation basket held at the Mark and at City Courts as well. So, and anyone that is interested in supporting them.
Okay, so this isn't just happening in Park City. It sounds like it's happening across the country.
Huh? Right, right. So the guy that started, his name is Billy McGahey. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's from Florida, and he has investigated that there is over 4 million pickleball players nationwide, and he's hoping to have on this special day, on 9/11, to have over 1 million. So we're hoping that Park City can gather up about 300 to 500. We're hoping for 300 to 500 players that day. So we were in the Park City Parade, and I was screaming and yelling and hoping, hooting and hollering, hoping that we're getting players to come. I'm going to give you the schedule, if you don't mind. So we're having two-hour time slots all day, again, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday. So the early time slot, 8 to 10, is for the advanced players, 4.0 or plus. The 10 to 12 time slot is for 3.0 players. The 12 to 2 time slot is 3.5 players. 2 to 4 p.m. is for the beginners at 2.5 level. And then we have a time slot for juniors, which is from 4 to 6 p.m. And then the evening hours from 6 to 8, we're having an open play social hour. And just to go back to that 12 to 2 time frame, we're hoping that you, Leslie, and your group of KPCW people, as well as we're hoping for Mayor, and actually we're gonna have some Basin Rec versus Park City Mark. So we're trying to get like a little celebrity time frame during that time as well, from 12 to 2 also.
Well, I wish I'm actually out of town, but I would be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell me, the parade, how did that go? Playing pickleball, walking downhill?
It was super fun, and I can tell you that a lot of us are sore from walking sideways. Whether it was the right side or the left side of your hips, whichever direction you were going. But we had Debbie Matamoris is a husband. Her husband's name is Frank. He was playing along with his son, Blake. They were playing guitar and violin, and we were singing a pickleball anthem and screaming, hooting, hollering about trying to get people more excited about playing pickleball. So,
yeah. Did you lose any balls?
We did give some away, yes.
Oh, you gave some away. I was going to say they're gone down the hill, but
along with the running of the balls, right?
Right, right. So you mentioned there's it's free. There's no registration fee. I mean, do people have to raise a certain amount of donations to participate, or it's
I don't
just
think
what they
so.
Feel
I think
comfortable
it's,
with?
Yeah, I think it's what you feel comfortable with, and we're just happy to have it out there, and hoping to support the Wounded Blue. And it is, so again, it is free, and you do not have to have a partner to show up. We are just hoping to get, you know, a bunch of people out and hopefully have a great time. And again, the juniors, right? We have juniors, anyone under 18, so we're having that time slot. So we're hoping to promote them as well from 4 to 6.
Okay, and you don't have to be a pickleball, a registered member of the Pickleball Association or anything?
No, but okay. I'm glad you said that. So there is, if you are a member of the pickleball, of the Park City Pickleball Club, most of our members should know to go to livepickleball.com. We have our own website to register for this. And then if you're not a member, you would go to pcpickleballclub.com for non-members, because we do want to count you, and we want to go back to this gentleman in Florida to tell him our numbers. So we do want to, we're hoping our small town of Park City can generate 300 to 500 people. So we're hoping for our small town to have large numbers.
Okay. I think you've got over 600 members now.
We do. We do have over 600 members. Yeah. Yeah. So we're hoping for, you know, at least that, you know, at least half of that in participation.
Yeah. Can you tell me, do you know how many you've registered so far?
That is a good question. Mm-hmm. I do not know that off the top of my head, but I am hoping that it's at least over 100 at this point. So
yeah.
We're rolling the ball as quickly as we can, right?
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you were hoping for at least 300. I mean, you got the court space then for all of that play, huh?
Yes. Yes. So we have 10 at the Mark and 6 at City Park, and then we have a system that we're going to run through that we're going to try to get people to play at least 10 to 15 minutes and then rotate on rotate on and off.
So it's not an all-day deal thing. It's
no, again, you can just show up for your two-hour time slot. I know I'm going to be there for 12 hours, Leslie, but... But no, for your time slot, for your level, it's just a two. So, we don't want people to think that they have to show up at any hour and play for 12 hours.
Okay, and they don't necessarily have to be there for 2 hours either.
No, they don't.
They go in
no.
and play, they're done.
Right, mm-hmm. right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and again, so we've got at the Mark, City Park, and any other locations?
So the overflow, we're hoping for overflow over at Trailside Courts and Willow Creek.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I'll just mention that website again. For non-members, it's pcpickleballclub.com. For members of the Park City Pickleball Club is livepickleball.com.
Okay. All right. Sounds like a great opportunity. Any idea how much they're trying to raise? I mean, when you think about a million players playing one day, that could be significant.
Yeah, I don't know if he has... I think he's just hoping for the masses and to generate... a nice donation for the Wounded Blue. So I don't know his goal, but we'll hopefully tap into that. So that'll be great.
Okay. And you mentioned first ever, so I'm guessing that they hope it to be an annual event on 9/11.
Yes, and we are hoping to continue it with that as well. Yes.
All right. Good luck, Tracy. Anything
Thank
else
you.
You'd like to mention?
I don't think so. Just go to those two websites for members and non-members, pcpickleballclub.com and members live pickleball. And again, it's not 12 hours. Pick your time slot based on your level.
Okay. Tracy Swenson is the vice president of Park City Pickleball Club. Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:34. Well, a broken water line on Boot Hill, located above the Snow Creek Shopping Center, drained about a million gallons of water and mud and debris into the parking lots below and dangerously close to some of the shops there. KPCW's Ben Lassiter was on the scene and has this report.
The flow is immediate and powerful as thousands of gallons per minute cascaded down Boot Hill, past Zion's Bank into the shopping center. The water came rushing past stores and restaurants at and below Twisted Fern. It pooled into parking lot rows, submerging some cars as much as halfway. The lion's share of it ended up forming a small lake in between the Market grocery store and the state liquor outlet. Joanne Howa of Natural Instincts Interior Design says it didn't take long to become a catastrophe.
At 1 o'clock, I noticed that water is coming like a river outside my showroom door, and came running out and thought, oh my gosh, and could look up behind Science Bank up into the hill to see that water is coming down like a waterfall all through that area into the Snow Creek Plaza's parking lot, bringing mud and debris as fast as it could.
Tatiana Portello's store, Baby Nini, which sells infant and children's goods, got the worst of it by being situated at a low point. Firefighters who were laying out sandbags to divert water into storm drains quickly built a wall around her door. To make matters worse, it was only her second day running the store.
I closed the deal probably about 10 days ago, and I've been working on it for a couple months. We got brand new inventory. We just opened the doors yesterday.
She said she's had a stressful summer, having evacuated from Pine Brook with her two young children during the Parley's Canyon fire, but she's still optimistic.
It kept going up and then came over the sidewalk, and that was just crazy. I thought it was going to get in the front and then in the back. It did get in the back a little, and now we're trying to contain the front. So it's been going for about 2 hours. It will be okay, though. It doesn't look, if nothing happens more than what it is, it seems like... We have a little bit of cleanup to do, but we can probably do that overnight.
By Tuesday evening, the flow had stopped after a tank holding 1 million gallons of drinking water was completely drained. According to Park City Public Utilities Director Clint McAfee, no one lost access to water.
The contractor was digging next to a concrete block that was holding a fitting onto a pipe. It's called a thrust block. And when that concrete block moved from digging around it, the fitting fell off. And it just opened up that water line. And that water line was so close to the tank that we didn't have a valve between where the fitting had come off and the tank, and so we couldn't shut it off.
He says it's unclear whether negligence was involved in the accident, but that actual damages to buildings were minimal. McAfee and the business owners thanked the emergency responders for their swift and effective effort to control the flood and protect the businesses and the shopping center. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
And another waterline break on Friday caused flooding inside the Silver Creek Justice Center. That's the site of Summit County's 3rd District Court. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more about that.
Summit County Sheriff's Lieutenant Andrew Wright said that officers who arrived at about 7:30 in the morning to open up the courthouse discovered the flood. He said the problem stemmed from a 6-inch water line connected to a valve outside the west end of the building, which can connect to a fire hose. Lieutenant Wright said that about 8 feet underground, bolts on the line broke. The west end of the Justice Center was flooded with about 1 inch of water, including the county attorney's office, one courtroom, and the lobby space extending down to the building's main entrance. Lieutenant Wright said the staff has been able to work in the building.
I think they're still able to work, but they have been having to move furniture and whatnot. They brought in a cleaning company to suck the water out of the carpet. Because it was for the fire suppression system, doesn't affect the main water for the toilets and sinks and drinking water. So that's still on. It's just the fire suppression system.
County Attorney Margaret Olson told KPCW that luckily she was at the Children's Justice Center near Highway 40 when the line broke and was able to rush over to her office and move equipment and belongings off the floor. She said she returned Saturday and was surprised to find the carpets were already dry. Lieutenant Wright said the facilities department has reported that everything in the building seems to be salvageable. However, Wright said the fire suppression line is still down and they're having trouble finding someone to repair the system. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
KPCW News Time now, 8:40. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Back in July, the Summit County Health Department selected Shelley Worley to serve as Deputy Health Director, stepping into the shoes left open by Dr. Phil Bondurant when he was named as the new Director of the Health Department, who took over for retiring Health Department Director Rich Bulla. Shelley joins me now in the studio. Again, good morning and congratulations.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so prior to this promotion, you were doing what for the Health Department?
So previously, I've been the Director of Health Promotion, and so our staff does a lot of education within the schools, the community, suicide prevention, diabetes prevention, diabetes self-management, just various programs throughout the county. But the last 18 months, we've just really been involved with COVID, right? And helping with the vaccination clinic. Through COVID, we brought on 3 community health workers as well to add to our health promotion staff. And those community health workers have been fabulous. They connect people to resources, needed resources in our community, anyone who's been impacted by COVID. So my role has been evolving over the last 5 years as Director of Health Promotion.
So has that position then been filled?
Yep. Just recently, yesterday was the first day for Catherine Wilson, who was previously on staff as a health educator. And we had a really impressive group of applicants, several from all across the state. And anyway, she just did a really great job in the interview, and we're really looking forward to see what she does with the health promotion department.
Yeah, and you were one of several candidates for the deputy health director. I mean, what do you think you bring to the job that the others couldn't?
I think it's a couple of things. One is I've lived in Summit County for over 30 years, and I think bringing an understanding of our community and the different aspects of our population really helped. The other was kind of a deeper understanding of the health department and what we need within our department with staff and culture and where we're going, right? So there's a lot of changes taking place in public health. And I think for me, what I brought to the table was just a vision for the department and where I would like to see it go.
Yeah, so we've got familiar people, but all in new roles here. So, mm-hmm. I mean, do you expect to see some changes how the department works?
Well, Dr. Bondurant, so we've worked previously together when he was in his role, not only as deputy director, but then also as the director for environmental health. He brings a different perspective than Rich Bolo did, just in the sense that he learned a lot from Rich. He has a similar way of communicating that Rich did in supporting our staff, but he's also he's different. It's just a different energy in the department, and he has a vision for it that's probably a little different. So, and part of that stems from the fact that we have new funds coming in. We're at a different point in the health department with reevaluating the needs of our community, right? So the impact of COVID and this pandemic has highlighted some things. And so we're at this place where we can look at things differently. We have to talk to our community members, see what their needs are. And Phil Bondurant is really in touch with that. And I think he's excited to see what we can do as a department too.
Yeah. So how long have you been with the health department?
I guess it's been, so I actually did my internship with Summit County Health Department through Katie Mullally in a Thriving Lifestyles program. But after that, I was on as a health educator. So I've probably been there 10 years.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about your new job. I mean, what is it that the deputy director does other than fill in when the director's not there?
Right. So my primary role is to support Phil Bondurant in his role, but outside of that is really to support the needs of our staff and help them reach their goals within their department. Environmental health, the WIC program, our early intervention program, sustainability. We have a lot going on also with mental health and our nursing staff. So my goal in the deputy director position is really to see what their needs are and how I can help them reach their goals. So each of their staff has professional goals that they would like to reach. Maybe we're starting new programs. Maybe we're looking at funding for those programs. Whatever it takes to enable them to move their programs forward, I am more than happy to help out with. And that's really what I would like to see.
Yeah. Have you heard about some new programs? I mean, should we be?
Well, I think right now we do have some funding coming in to address health equity. And through COVID, COVID kind of highlighted some needs that we didn't notice before. Some of that had to do with some of our senior population, communicating with them, helping them make appointments to get vaccines. And we learned a lot through that process. Also with them being isolated, the emotional needs and the physical needs of that population, some of that we were aware of before, but it was really highlighted through COVID. So that's one of the things we want to look at. Some things in the schools, physical activity, nutrition, those type of things in the schools. There's just a various set of programs that we would like to dig a little deeper into and see what we can offer to the community.
Yeah, and as the former county health promotion director, it sounds like you did a lot to expand the county's suicide prevention program. How so?
Well, initially, when I came on, we were only doing 4 suicide prevention trainings per year. Over the last, 4 years, we've averaged around 45 to 50. We've expanded our suicide prevention efforts. We offer a suicide prevention training. It's called Question, Persuade, and Refer. It's QPR, and we offer that to businesses, schools, and it's basically a way that people can identify someone who might be experiencing a crisis and then give them the tools to get the professional help that they might need to get them through this crisis. And Alyssa Mitchell, one of our health educators, has done a great job reaching out to local organizations and businesses and offering that and expanding it. So that's been very successful. And now also working with Aaron Newman and his staff, his prevention staff, we're hoping to expand that even further into businesses with their HR programs so they can make sure they're meeting their employees' needs.
And I think we've learned a lot about that, because it used to be, oh, let's not talk about it, you know, because we don't want to push somebody over the edge here. And yet what we have found with this QPR program is that it's really important that we keep questioning him. Yeah?
Right, right. And not to be fearful of their response, right? Because I think, like you said, Leslie, we're always fearful that maybe by something that we've said, it's going to encourage them in that direction. And we've discovered through studies that's not the case. Actually, people feel relief when they're able to talk about their feelings and maybe something that they're struggling with. And if they are considering hurting themselves, they feel relief being able to talk to someone and get some professional help.
You also have worked to increase the county's diabetes prevention services. Do you have some success at that? I mean, is that something that you can look at to see maybe the rates going down? Or
yeah, what we have seen, Serene Brooks is our diabetes educator, and she's amazing. She's started to build this program. She's had a lot of work at the state level as well, developing it across the state. Not only are we doing diabetes prevention program, which is it's 22 sessions over a year, which is what we have found to be helpful in behavior change, right? Behavior doesn't change overnight. But the diabetes prevention program has been fabulous. We've seen people have great success with it. But the other thing she's done, which we're just now starting to push out into the community, is diabetes self-management. So those who have already been diagnosed with diabetes, that they can get some new skills from, help work through that with Serene. So to accomplish their goals and be able to maintain a safe level. That's something that Serene's been working on. She's offering it in at each of our locations at the health department, in Colville, Camas, and the Park City area. So people can schedule one-on-ones with Serene and get some education.
Yeah, and we're talking type 2 diabetes, yes, here, and yeah, and we know that diet and exercise can really be very effective in, yep, changing things around.
Yeah, so exercise, little changes in your nutrition can have a great impact on reducing or preventing type 2 diabetes.
Okay, and of course, you know, the elephant in the room, the COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, we got through that mass vaccination clinic, something I know that you were very involved with. I think you served as the program administrator.
I did. Worked closely with Chris Crowley on that.
Yeah. Where do things go from here with regard to that? I mean, it's now just being done, I think, at the health department or at pharmacies?
Yep. So the local pharmacies are offering the vaccine, but we're also offering it at all three of our locations. People can call the health department and schedule an appointment. Everyone's just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the boosters and the vaccine, when it's going to become available for those under the age of 12, and we're just kind of monitoring it and seeing what's going to happen with that.
Okay. Again, we don't have at this point any booster clinics to talk about. I mean, what's the holdup there?
Yeah, it's very limited right now for who the booster shot is available for. You could call the health department and they can walk you through that, who is eligible for that. But I know that Derek Moss, our nursing director, is keeping an eye on that, and we're getting things in place to be able to make that available to people when it comes out.
Okay. Shelley, yeah, anything else you want to mention?
Nope. Just that we're doing a really great job as a county with vaccination rates, and it's really great to be able to be in this position moving forward.
Again, congratulations, Shelley. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
In. And Shelley Worley has been named as the Deputy Summit County Health Director. KPCW News Time now, 8:52. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. 8:53 here. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, due to the rising surge of COVID-19 cases in the area, the Park City Sunrise Rotary Club has decided to cancel its 6th annual Shot Ski event that was scheduled to happen early October, October 9th, on Park City's Main Street. Plans are, though, already in motion for next year's event that will also be scheduled in October of 2022. The good news is that High West Distillery says it will donate $10,000 to the Rotary Grant Program. So that means that the fundraiser that has raised money for area nonprofits will continue. Sunrise Rotary Club member Connie Nelson said in a press release that although the friendly rivalry with Breckenridge for the longest shot ski will be on hold this year, they are excited to look forward to next year's event that will continue to benefit, again, the grant program. Despite the event's hiatus, Shot Ski's presenting sponsor, as I mentioned, High West Distillery, continuing on with a donation of $10,000 to in lieu of the event that's taking place this year. KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Well, one more day, the rail trail from Bonanza Drive to Richardson Flat will be closed for repairs. The Park City Council budgeted some $850,000 in its budget this year to make improvements to the iconic trail that travels about 28 miles from Park City to Echo Reservoir, located just north of Colville. However, the city funds will only be used for about the first 3 miles of the paved trail between Bonanza Drive and the Park City Heights neighborhood. Park City Streets Supervisor Casey Coleman says that the trail is closed at both ends and at all connections and will remain closed until 7 p.m. Today, or yesterday, they spent a lot of time putting down patching potholes and putting down crack seal. Today, they're coming back to seal in the entire trail. He says it will be ready for use, so after 7 p.m., even though it is being sealed with an asphalt product. The rail trail is officially a state park and was maintained for years by the Mountain Trails Foundation. However, several years ago, the grant was awarded to another third-party organization for maintaining the entire 28 miles of trail. In April, the Park City Council decided to take over the nearly 3 miles of trail that is within the city limits. This $850,000 will be used for surface improvements, benches, possibly some lighting, and even widening the trail in places. Well, the Heber City Council met last night, and many of the topics for discussion included new development, as well as how to bolster infrastructure to accommodate that growth. The Heber Council was scheduled to vote on a new 16-acre subdivision west of Rocky Mountain Elementary School, surrounding that church there at 650 South. The Kimball Villas would bring some 64 units of high-density housing and an assisted living facility with 68 rooms. Also, the council was scheduled to authorize city staff to negotiate a contract for a major sewer and water line project with Summit Engineering. This contract would be for the first phase of a project to replace water and sewer lines within the Old Town area. Heber City Manager Matt Brower says the first phase will cost about $24 million. Also, the council was scheduled to consider an amendment to its sensitive lands ordinance. This would add protections to the aquifers and surface water that are related to local developments and also tweak zoning details. Also, the Camas Planning Commission met last night to discuss whether or not to allow nightly rentals in town. City staff planner Amanda Huffmeyer reported that a number of nightly rentals have appeared in town. The planning commissioners need to decide if the rentals should be allowed, where they should be allowed, and what process should be followed to permit them, whether that be a business license, an approval by the planning commission, or perhaps another option. A second public hearing was held to address concerns about a proposal to lower the maximum building height in mixed-use zones from about 35 feet to 32 feet. This revision would also state that above a commercial level in a mixed-use building, only one level of residential units is allowed, but the residential units may have multiple stories. Finally, a hearing was held on a modification governing land use violations, enforcement, and appeals. City staff reports that there are currently several sections about enforcement in the city code, and they want to consolidate and update the regulations to have one uniform policy. stay tuned. Coming up on the Mountain Live, today's guests include Dr. Blythe Grossberg. Her new book, I Left My Homework in the Hamptons, What I Learned Teaching the Children of the 1%. This is her new book about tutoring Manhattan's elite. Then Dr. Dale Bredesen has a new book titled The First Survivors of Alzheimer's, How Patients Recovered Life and Hope. In their own words, you can hear directly from the first survivors of Alzheimer's with their own amazing stories of hope told in their own words, and how what seemed like an inevitable outcome of cognitive decline and dementia now going from hopeless to hopeful once again. -52 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Once again, National Weather Service is calling for smoky, sunny skies, looking for a high today of about 85. 56 is the overnight low. We've got winds coming out of the southwest later this week, so that is going to help blow some of that smoke along. Looks like we've got another smoky day tomorrow with a high of 86 by Friday, though, as we see a cold front approach. Temperatures dropping by about 6 degrees. We'll see a 30% chance of a shower and isolated thunderstorm Friday night on into Saturday, and with those winds changing, again, thinning out some of that smoke. Heber Valley reporting 48 degrees there at the airport, again, with some of that patchy sunny skies, looking for a high there of 92. 45 is the overnight low. Another warm one tomorrow, 94. Again, with things cooling off Friday as we see that front approach, with a slight chance of some rain Friday into Friday night, and again, another chance on Saturday. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. It's 9 o'clock. Time for news.